Come on, come on.
And welcome to another edition of Rose City Politics. This week we have myself, Doug Sartori, along with Kieran McKenzie. Welcome back, Kieran, from your fun in the sun.
Where's my pina colada? Where's my deck chair? No, nice to be back. Thanks, Doug.
Good. Welcome back. And Don Merrifield is with us. You didn't go anywhere, Don.
No, I have a restraining order. I can't leave the country. So.
We have a very special edition of Rose City Politics tonight. It is not the Don Gets Braces episode. Rather that we are talking about journalism with journalists, with some actual real live journalists. In studio with us, we have Doug Schmidt, reporter, longtime reporter with the Windsor Star. Good evening.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
you say that now.
And on the line, we have Joey Coleman. Joey Coleman is an independent journalist from Hamilton, Ontario, who covers City Hall on thepublicrecord.ca. And we're a little bit low-tech in the studio, so I'm just going to turn around and make sure I got a thumbs up from my colleagues that they are hearing Joey.
No.
Okay.
I just heard a beep. I think you're hearing me now.
Yes, we can. Nice to see you, Joey.
Glad to be on air and to be heard.
Low-tech's great for newspaper people.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of shuffling around going on, but I think we're in good shape now. Okay. Tonight we want to talk a little bit about the future of media. A few weeks back, we did a program where we spent quite a bit of time talking about the state of media and journalism in Windsor. I think it would be not a controversial thing to say that journalism in general is on the decline as a profession. As a commercial entity, at least traditional media is in a bit of a decline right now. And we have seen some evidence of that decline here in Windsor. We talked a bit, Kieran, about the layoffs at various media outlets here in Windsor, and the staff reductions and the shrinking of the size of the media. And so tonight we thought we would go back to some actual journalists and ask them how they're faring. And in particular, we wanted to talk to Joey Coleman. Joey has been independent and working on his own for how long, Joey?
I've been on my own since 2010.
Okay, how'd you get started?
I'm going to try and make this short, as is the case with so many tech things. You do one thing and it leads to another, which leads to another and leads to another. I often say I'm an accidental journalist. So I started blogging in 2004 as a coder. I just left the military. The first night I was out, I sat down and said, where's the internet at today? And there was this new thing, blogging. To code, I had to write. And I started writing about what was happening on my campus and then at other campuses. In 2007, Maclean's Magazine hired me to cover universities, and that led to me being in journalism at the national level till 2010. I kept some freelance work going for 2 years after that, and as I was doing national journalism and traveling a lot, I realized that the real challenge was the collapse of local journalism. You know, I would go as a national journalist to things, and there'd be a whole bunch of us, but I realized I was losing touch with my own hometown. And so in 2010, I came back to local journalism. I loved doing it. In 2012, I launched The Public Record to try to find a way of doing high-quality journalism that people will support financially.
Great. I want to ask Doug now. Doug, do you feel like there's a decline in local journalism?
Well, you say there's a decline in local journalism, and I think what you're talking about is bodies and also the volume of media that's out there. Like our paper is shrunk in size. But in terms of decline when it comes to an audience, we have a much bigger audience now, online and digital, than we've ever had. There's more people just devouring news, and part of that is, you know, the 24/7 cycle. The only problem is many of those readers and that audience is getting it for free. We get hundreds of thousands of hits on our website every month. The bulk of those, like a big chunk of those, is Facebook and Google directs them there. And we don't get any monetization out of that. So in terms of decline, yes. I mean, we're suffering because the revenues are down. But we used to feed off the national advertising. A lot of that national advertising now is gone to the web. And so that used to be our profit margins. So we've had to, well, the newspaper sector anyways has had to adjust to that. And it's the same with radio and TV. They're both, everybody's in, as you call it, decline for that reason.
Sure. So it's a revenue decline, not a decline, as you say, in interest. And right. And that's an interesting point. And I wanted to ask both you and Joey about that. So I'll switch back to Joey. I wanted to ask about the interest in local journalism. Do you think that is something that has continued steadily throughout the time that you have been doing this work?
People want to know what's happening on their street, what's happening in their community. There's an interest. You know, the challenge being is that it goes back to business model. And even back in the glory days of the newspaper, where they had a lot of paid subscribers, you also had large weeklies that did a lot of the community-based reporting. So, you know, in Hamilton, those weeklies are still going along, and they're doing fairly decently. You know, they're not quite yet at the flyer wrapper stage that we've seen in a lot of other areas. So, you know, they're still doing that sort of community work. There's an interest. The challenge is monetizing it, and the challenge is convincing people to pay for it. And so that's really where that disconnect is. You know, the articles that get a lot of traffic are crime, weather, and traffic, you know, collisions. But will people pay for that? And that's the real challenge that I found is, and, you know, this is going back to the old advertising model. Crime coverage got a lot of readers. It sold the eyeballs for the advertising. But I've never really heard anybody say beyond a crime novel that they're willing to pay for that day-to-day crime coverage. But I am hearing people saying, I will pay for somebody to be at City Hall watching where I cannot.
So I think that that brings us to your business model. Joey, how are you funded?
So people voluntarily contribute money. So I'm resetting the system right now because with the change in the Canadian-U.S. currency, using a U.S.-based system such as Patreon does not work in Canada anymore because of that exchange rate. It really discourages people because there's that instability in the rate. They don't know what they're paying in 3 months because it's based upon the interest rate. But it's a monthly payment system using Stripe. So people voluntarily give 10, 20, 25. I have one person who used to give $100 a month and says they're going to, with the currency exchange set to Canadian from American. And that's how it is I license everything I do Creative Commons by attribution share alike, which is an open culture license, because the value is in the service, not necessarily in the copyright. And that's another change in the shift. I have no paywall. I have no third-party advertising. I have no third-party trackers on my website.
Huh. That's really a fascinating model. And are you able to sustain yourself?
I'm not yet sustainable. I had encountered a problem a year ago where City Hall severely restricted my ability to cover City Hall, and I'm still not recognized as media by my City Hall. What had occurred was the chair of the Accountability and Transparency Committee took objection to my covering the Accountability and Transparency Committee, warned me to stop writing about the Accountability and Transparency Committee, because in his opinion, I was unfairly targeting the committee because of its name, to which I replied, yes, I'm targeting the Accountability and Transparency Committee to be accountable and transparent. He physically assaulted me after a meeting. He also oversaw the Integrity Commissioner, who Windsor may remember, the great Earl Bassey, who was your Integrity Commissioner before you guys booted him out of town. And he did an investigation which involved talking to the counselor and nobody else. And the counselor said, well, he was eavesdropping on public meetings and eavesdropping on my conversation. And so the Integrity Commissioner ruled that the counselor's actions were excusable because I had been eavesdropping. And then the city put in a bunch of anti-eavesdropping restrictions to prevent eavesdropping on public meetings. the absurdity, everything I just said to you, it sounds absolutely absurd, and it's what happened. So I had to step away for a while. There was a police investigation, a whole bunch of mess, and as a journalist, you don't want to be in the center of a story, so you step back and respect that. So that interrupted, but I was feeling very confident I was getting to sustainability. I feel I'm going to get there. And the one thing to note, because a lot of people sort of are taken back by the idea that there's no paywall, is I've talked to a lot of the big donors, people who, when I did capital crowdfunding campaigns, so block some crowdfunding campaigns, would give $250 or $500. And each and every one of them was very clear. They said that they were giving money to fund my journalism because they valued the public service and the fact it was available to everyone. And if it wasn't open, they would give a lot less money because they wouldn't feel that it was a community service.
Kieran McKenzie here, Joey. I really do appreciate the work that you do. It's pretty incredible that you've actually, maybe in some respects, discovered that there actually is a market for quality journalism, independent journalism. But what you've outlined to us, at least to some degree, is the difficulty that there is, in carving out a living in terms of being able to do it, to do journalism that way. Have you ever been tempted to sort of hang it up and, you know, go work for one of the big firms? And what if obviously you've chosen not to do that, if you have ever pondered it, what ultimately was it that convinced you to keep doing what you're doing?
So Hamilton's part of the Toronto media market, which is a bit of a unique media market. But up till about a year ago, if you were a radical and you went outside of that mainstream, you know, you, like me, I went digital, I went open data, and I went disruptor, you know. So there was a bit of a black mark on me within the journalism community because I was seen to be destroying journalism by getting the government to release information, not through the media, but just direct citizens. And this, some of the arguments I had with some of my journalism peers were ridiculous. They're like, well, you know, the government gives that to us and then we can put it on our website and you're taking that away from us. And I've always said, if the government can give it directly, you don't have a business model. You just have a distribution model, and there's a difference. You can be disrupted on distribution. So that was part of it. But then also, I'm having fun. I'm really enjoying doing this. When I was covering national stuff, I had a great job. I will never say anything bad about where I worked. But, you know, I started to burn out. I didn't feel I was making a difference. I was churning out content, but was I actually making our society better? Whereas here in Hamilton, I know I'm making society better. I know I'm informing people. I know I'm contributing to my community. So those non-tangibles, those non-monetary benefits are worth a lot to me.
The situation that you got yourself into with the counselor and the investigation with the with the integrity commissioner, did that moment ever give you some pause? Because it's probably much easier for a counselor and just the city hall generally in the form of the integrity commissioner in this instance to kind of disregard an independent journalist versus let's say somebody like Doug, who's here this evening with us covering city hall. He's got the entire paper behind him, the paper that is the paper of record for our community. There's a different approach that public officials and elected officials are going to take with individuals with that kind of, let's say, backing, if you will, versus somebody who's doing it independently, such as yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely, without a doubt, that the counselor would never have committed assault. Mm-hmm. There's no way the police board would have said that it was okay, like they did. He's also chair of the police board, so mm-hmm. irony upon irony. and... Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely, it would never have happened. And, you know, that's the thing. But on the same note, I don't think that if I was in a mainstream media outlet, I would have had the time to go after issues of accountability and transparency like I was. I knew that I was infuriating powerful people at City Hall. I knew I was putting a mark on my back by covering that committee, because I knew that the council saw that as a line in the sand. If the accountability and this was exactly what they said, why they couldn't make the accountability and transparency committee transparent, is they said, well, if that committee starts putting its agendas and minutes on the internet, people expect all the other committees to put their agendas and minutes on the internet, which was exactly my point. There's just no way that I would have had the time to really pursue that battle, which doesn't get you a lot of readership, gets you in a lot of controversy, and, you know, brand reputation-wise, I'm rebuilding, right? Because a lot of people are like, well, geez, this looks like nothing, and, you know, that really is it. But on the same note, you know, that's just part of the reality right now as we rebuild journalism, is that for quite a while, independent people are going to be weaker than the old institutions were. But as they build up, that institutional strength will grow, and we will be better for it. I want to make very clear when I say that, though, that I'd much rather we go back to the 80s when we had these large newsrooms, and a guy like me could walk into a newsroom, they go, hey, you know how to write, you have some talent, here's a job.
Mm-hmm. Fantasy.
Doug, I actually wanted to ask you, just to address some of the things that Joey's talking about, coming from that side of the business, you know, working for a big media conglomerate and the biggest paper in town, the paper of record in Windsor. Do you feel any of those pressures to perhaps not be able to dig into issues maybe as much as somebody like Joey has the opportunity to do, being an independent journalist?
Well, I feel for Joey when he was tackling that committee. And see, that's the challenge here, is this committee, you take a few steps back. It's a small committee, a very mm-hmm. narrowly defined role. You can go after it. But, you know, you have a general audience out there. You're kind of serving all of their needs and their wants and desires, and you have a limited resources to put into these things. Is the story out of there big enough that you can devote long-term mm-hmm. resources to that? Sometimes it is, but other times it's really hard because, you know, Joey sort of, he determines what the stories are that he's going to cover. With us, it's we have to get through several walls. The editors have to be interested. You know, above them, they have to be interested. Everything has to be argued. And, you know, does it get into the paper? Do you get to spend a day or a week or longer on a single story? Mm-hmm. It's getting more and more difficult to do those in-depth stories. It's not so much that, you know, your employer's pulling you back because it's controversial. Other newsrooms, I don't know, but I know in the Windsor Star, we love controversy. We love mm-hmm. digging in things. If, you know, if somebody came and assaulted one of us, wow, that'd be on the front page forever. It mm-hmm. would be great.
Well, to get to a bit of a difference between the media here. So in Hamilton, one of the city councilors blew the whistle on some of the stuff that happened behind the scenes, right? He came out very publicly on video and says, council defined Joey's activities as eavesdropping and took great offense to him bringing a camera into public meetings. That's the issue here. And the Hamilton Spectator ran an editorial 3 days later telling people stop talking about the story. Well, they had been covering it up, trying to generate the controversy, and then the editorial said, time for it to fade to memory, which they rightfully got criticized for. But back to in a newsroom, so when I worked for a national publication covering higher education, you have to generate interest. You have to generate the stories that go to a wide reach. And I had a passion project that was covering the policy issues around Native education. The short of it was a few Native higher education institutes were defunded because the province said it's First Nations, not our responsibility. The federal government said it's education, it's not us. And they went back and forth fighting. And these stories are huge importance in public policy. They got no readership. So that was a passion project. They let me do it, but we also had to pay the bill. And that meant covering things like a stupid thing a student politician said in Ottawa. And that balance has to occur. Me, I don't have that balance because my reader, well, first, I'm not yet sustainable, and I want to emphasize that again, right? I haven't yet solved the local media problem. I'm working to solve it. But I can get away with that because my reader base is a niche audience who are funding me and the brand reputation I have and are willing to go 2 or 3 days without a story on the public record because they trust I'm doing something else. But even there, they may not read the story, but they go, oh, okay, I'm glad Joey's doing that. There's a very different business model. I you know, don't have hundreds of people that are relying upon me to produce an audience to get the advertising to pay their bill, right?
And you know what? I think that's fantastic that you have that engaged readership. You'll find, you know, currently today in North America and Canada for sure, people won't pay for that. They don't want to pay for news if they can get it for free. It's more of a European thing that people are willing to pay. That's why subscriptions are higher there, price-wise, because people are willing to invest in something. They see the value in that. We still don't see that. People will pay Netflix for movies. They'll pay iTunes for songs, but they still won't pay for journalism. And that's something that we're going to have to, you know, part of that is our responsibility as well as mainstream media. We need to emphasize that this is important. This is what you get when, you know, you invest your time, your money into this kind of information gathering. I think it's fantastic what you're doing. I wish we had somebody like you here in Windsor because, you know, it forces us to up our game. If you have somebody there independently ferreting out stuff at City Hall, well, we're going to have to get that as well. We can't have somebody, you know, and that's the competitive nature. And that's how it used to be when there were large newsrooms in radio, TV, and newspaper. Everybody was vying to get the next big scoop. And sometimes it required a lot of digging and extra level of, you know, digging down into some of these issues. There's a little less of that now because, you know, there's some radio stations, they'll have like one reporter. I mean, it's impossible to like dig deep at City Hall, say. We're still very fortunate, Windsor Star, we have dedicated reporters on beats. But still, it's, you know, it takes extra effort to get that extra stuff out there. And I'm curious, Joey, just, you know, you're able to narrowly focus in on City Hall. Like, what's the feedback been with the audience? Has the audience been growing, like, in terms of when you talk about you're not quite there in sustainability? Is that because the numbers are missing, or is there something else?
So it's a mixture. It's a lot of things. So there's a lot of people that, so the system I've set up for payments has to protect the identity of people that are funding, which is a challenge, which is a bit of an irony because I'm a very open media guy. I've had a lot of people that used to give money who have said, my spouse is giving money, but we don't want, because they're employed at City Hall, they don't want the counselors to know that they're subscribers of my journalism because it used to be publicly available who was funding me, right? So there's that's, but that's a small piece of it. It's that it hasn't grown yet, and that people are still getting used to the idea of paying for news. I'm just tweeting right now an article that I put up. So my Twitter is Joey Coleman. About a year ago, where I explained the business model and where I'm thinking it's going. I agree. People are not willing to pay for news, and as much as I love to just beat that drum and hope that people listen, I don't think we're there yet. I think in 5 to 10 years, once they realize what they've lost, they'll fund it. But until they realize they've lost it, I don't think we're there. So one of the things I'm trying to work on is, I call it the internet funding watchdog journalism and the 1% internet rule, which is 1% of people on most websites like Wikipedia are the heavy contributors. They really carry the weight of the entire organization. They're willing to pay for it, they're willing to fund it and support others. In that 1%, a tenth of a percent of the overall readers are the people who are going to fund it well beyond what they take, what they need to fund it for, right? So those are the people that were giving $250 to $500 in my capital campaign. And I think that 9% of the population we can get on board with funding once they see that it's something that other people are doing. I unfortunately think that 90% of the populace may never fund journalism to the point it needs to be funded. So we're going to need to figure out how do we produce great journalism in that, within those financial constraints.
That's really interesting, and I wonder how long the 10% will be content to have the 90% free riding on their shoulders. But before we go to break, I want to talk after the break about the question that Doug raised, which I think is excellent, is what would it take to have a Joey Coleman in Windsor. So we've talked a little bit about the editorial piece, but I want to talk about the technical stuff that makes what you do possible. I think there's a big difference, at least my perception from what I see on your website, there's a big difference between the kind of tools available to an independent journalist at Hamilton City Hall and the kind of tools available to any journalist at City Hall in Windsor. The video that you record, how do you get that?
So that's my own video camera.
Oh, is that right? That's not, yeah. You're not plugging into...
Oh, no. The city... the city does not let me use nearly any resources. They do let me use the internet again. There was a period of time where part of the anti-eavesdropping thing was to prevent me from using the internet because I hacked the city website by accessing our RSS feed they failed to turn off. But I crowdfund my own equipment, and I live stream those meetings in HD completely on my own. The good news for Hamiltonians is that the city is planning to launch a competing live stream sometime this year. So,
okay, excellent. Before we go to break, Don, do you have any questions for Joey or Doug?
I'm just happy he got back into the free Wi-Fi. I found that was very interesting. I guess a question I'll ask, it's almost... How do you differentiate yourself from, you know, some Yahoo with a blog who claims to be a journalist? I'm sure that's going to be the issue going forward, even from a national media standpoint. Someone like Doug can write a story, and then someone who puts a fancy web page together and calls himself a journalist can completely contradict him. And unfortunately, I think in the public, what you're running into is if you look like you know what you're talking about, people assume you know what you're talking about. How would the public be able to tell the difference between some nut job with a blog and someone who actually knows what he's talking about? Because we always assume if you work for the Windsor Star or work for CBS News, you've been vetted, you know what you're talking about. Whereas, you know, when we get down to the blog range, any crazy guy can do one. I can do one, for crying out loud.
Well, it's the same way that people have differentiated between sane politicians and insane politicians for centuries.
There is no difference, Joey.
you listen, and you build that trust and credibility over time. The reality is that, yeah, somebody could come in tomorrow and try to disrupt me and be the Ezra Levant of Hamilton City Hall coverage. And I would defend the right of that person to provide that coverage. But I think the general public, after a few times, will go, wait a second, this guy cannot back up what he's saying with fact. The reason that I actually live stream all these meetings is it's a great check and balance on my ability to get a story wrong or to potentially sensationalize what's happening. The entire record's there, so everything I write, you can go and see the source documentation. And I think that is how you build credibility. And I will use the Wikipedia example. When Wikipedia launched, there were a lot of sites trying to be the online encyclopedia. How Wikipedia became the online encyclopedia was the quality of the work, the referencing, and the linking out. And people differentiate over time. There's nobody who competes with Wikipedia anymore because people know where they can trust the information. And even there, when you have the problems of false information, the crowd eventually corrects it. And the correction happens much quicker now than it used to.
Great stuff. We are up against the break. Joey, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight. Very enlightening stuff. Joey Coleman is a City Hall reporter, a self-appointed and self-funded City Hall reporter in Hamilton, Ontario. And his website is thepublicrecord.ca. Thanks again, Joey.
Thank you.